Greetings, kindred witches. Welcome to this episode of Atomic Witchcraft.
Here, we share our experiences as we build a modern-day inclusive witchcraft practice rooted in nature seasons, celestial cycles, and the science of energy.
Join us as we build a craft that learns from our past, is rooted in our present, and works toward building a better future, all while connecting deeply to the earth and sky around us.
Let us begin a new era of witchcraft. Hi everyone, I'm Ash, an atomic witch walking an eclectic road since the 90s.
I'm Alyssa, about 20 years in and growing a mostly green path.
And I'm Jay, new to the practice, composing a bard witch's craft. Because witch weaves together many webs, past, present, and future, we'd like to acknowledge that we are currently practicing our craft on the lands of the Coast Salish peoples, specifically the Duwamish, Muckleshoot, and Puyallup tribes.
The Atomic team participates in Real Rent, and we encourage you to engage with and contribute to similar programs in your area.
Welcome to our grove, here at the Atomic Hearth. Now, let's get witchy.
Welcome back to the Atomic Hearth. We're at the full moon and I am wrapping up my exploration of ice magics. In my previous episode, I chatted about how this is my first foray into using ice, despite already being aware of ways to feature it in spells, my mental blocks around the subject, and my ideas around a possible fear release spell. Today, I'll round out my journey and share with you the finalized version of my spell, which you can, of course, are welcome to use. But before we jump in, let's take it back to the basics. This time, we'll be chatting about coming out of the broom closet as a witch.
While today's episode is going to pick up on our discussion around ice, we also wanted to provide space each full moon this season to address the infamous "where do I begin?" question with witchcraft. Now, if you've been practicing a while, don't skip ahead just yet. Consider how revisiting the foundational techniques and questions of our practice can actually provide more context, layers, depth, and space. A bit of a refresh, reaffirmation moment. So we encourage everyone, no matter how long you've been practicing, to join us in re-exploring the foundations of our craft, especially if you find yourself pressed for time. Returning to the roots can be a great way to stay connected. As we are wrapping up our Witchcraft 101 segments, we wanted to take a moment to talk about coming out of the broom closet, or sharing with others that you're a witch. We have to preface this with saying that in all cases, please always keep your safety first and foremost when making this choice, and this includes your emotional as well as physical safety. If you are under 18, still living at home, this also gets a bit trickier and will really depend upon the relationship that you have with your parents or guardians. I do encourage inviting them in if there are humans who you feel supported by. You can ease in, no need to just like leave a witchcraft book on the table, although I certainly know a few friends who went that route in high school, with mixed results. If you're looking for some good places to start the conversation, I honestly recommend starting from a place of meditation and mindfulness, sharing that you are incorporating that into your daily routine and how that impacts your ability to move through the world. It might even pique some interest, but hopefully it doesn't receive negativity. If it does, you have to test that water and base it on your tolerance level. If you can handle a little chiding, you might continue to share, but not go beyond that. If it's a full-on negative response, it's a good sign to wait, to see if they come around, or if perhaps that is just a conversation or fact you don't share with this particular human. Spending time in nature and celebrating the seasons are also good conversations that people from most backgrounds will agree with or understand. This would be to take it a step further, maybe allowing for a small seasonal display, aka a hidden altar, or incorporating some activities that can be done together. You can do all of this without ever whispering the word witch. Not that we should be ashamed, but to understand that we are still in the process of reclaiming that word as a community, and it's one that takes on different connotations and understandings based on the culture and sometimes even region. Here in the Pacific Northwest, if I wear a shirt that says "support your local witches," I get compliments and maybe a few side eyes. But if I wore that shirt in Arizona or other more conservative areas, I would get whispers, maybe even spat at. I definitely had moms tuck their children away when I wore witchy hats or clothing in high school. And mind you, that was the late 90s, early 2000s. And I admit there have been some instances in my life where I avoided the word witch and just say that I focused on a more spiritual and nature practice. That can still be a pretty big shift, though, if you're making the switch from a more organized religion or a community that is rooted in a specific and maybe sometimes conflicting beliefs. These situations are a bit more tricky and take a bit more time. Sometimes it takes leaving that community or situation first. Same with turning 18 and moving into your own home where you can put up that altar. Until then, you might create a hidden altar, one that is truly tucked away or hidden in plain sight. Ancestor and seasonal altars are great for this, by the way. Sometimes we do have to live in a bit of secrecy until we are able to change our situation. Now, everyone's story or journey here is different. In fact, even our three stories are very different, which is also to say that there is no right way or wrong way to go about it. We want to share our stories, both to share what we have learned, but also in connecting with those of you who may be on similar paths. So Alyssa, want to share a bit about your journey?
Yeah, I never really had a big coming out of the broom closet moment. I never had to, or even felt a need to. Growing up, we were not a religious family at all. I think, from what I can remember, we went to church once or twice, only on Christmas Eve, and that was mostly for the candlelit carol singing. But there was no prayer before dinner, no talk of God, no Sunday school, no baptism for me. Besides, my mom had very much discovered a more woo-woo spiritual path in the 80s and practiced that instead, though she kept it more under the radar until the early 2000s when it became quite popular. Which is, coincidentally, when I began exploring witchcraft. While I could respect the more zen, love and light approach to spirituality, I knew fairly early on it just wasn't for me. I was way too fiery for it and wanted something that would better fit my personality. And frankly, the ethereal nature of this spirituality was too out there for me, and I needed something more rooted in the earth. And honestly, I was a total fantasy book fiend, and still am, so a path that had more magic to it felt right, and thus I began to poke around witchcraft. Since occult and spiritual stores were places we frequented already, shout out to Planet Earth Gallery in the Poconos and the very witchy woman who ran it there, it wasn't hard for me to start acquiring books around the craft. At the time, it was mostly Wicca books, since that's what was available. Scott Cunningham's Earth Power was one of the early books I got, along with Anne Marie Gallagher's The Wicca Bible and The Spell Bible. From there, it was just about exploring what I liked, what I didn't like, and sort of over time crafting my own formula for witchcraft. I knew fairly early on I wasn't jazzed about what Wicca was. I didn't like this idea of hierarchy that premated it, and didn't love all the rules, and this heavy leaning into deity didn't quite sit well with me. So I really just did my own thing for a few years, and I was really lucky to be supported in it. My immediate family had zero issues with me practicing, and came to community events like Beltane and Samhain, as we called them. I felt safe enough to openly wear a pentacle, even though I lived in a more rural area. And let's be honest, a big reason for my wearing it was my attempts to make the people around me uncomfortable or stir up trouble. I was, still am, very cheeky. I realize that my story is unusual for most practicing the craft. And hey, it wasn't all acceptance and support. I know my dad did his best to not roll his eyes about it, and some extended family got weird about it sometimes. But other than that, my out-of-the-broom-closet experience is pretty drama-free. I did lose the threads of my craft for several years, especially in college slash living in Southern California. So much of the deep heart of my practice is rooted in green and natural cycles, and living somewhere so dry, with very little seasonal shift, meant my practice was way on the back burner for a good chunk of my 20s. Once we moved up to the PNW, that all changed. And between the nature that now surrounded me and being able to practice with Ash and Jay, it brought it more into the forefront for me. But even with friends or new people I meet, there's no coming out. I am open about how I live and present myself, and if someone were to inquire, I would tell them. It's like when I realized I was bisexual. I didn't feel a need to come out. I just chose to exist in this truth and live openly about it. I realize this is extremely privileged and unusual for most. Everyone's journey is different, and yours will be very different from anyone else's. Ash, how about you? I know yours is a bit different from mine.
So for me, it's been a mixed journey, though. Slow in the brewing. Those that listen to early episodes have heard the story before, but essentially at the great age of 10 or 11, so like 1995, I found a Scott Cunningham book in my older sister's bedroom. Until then, we were raised to be a bit non-religious. It wasn't something we talked about, aside from that my grandfather on my dad's side was a minister. My dad, being the youngest of nine, didn't really adopt those beliefs in a strong way, though, so we never went to church, and my mom's side was also very non-religious. It's not to say that they didn't believe in God, because when asked, many did, but we weren't living in the patterns of any particular tradition other than the American capitalist ones, you know, Santa, Valentine's, bunnies for Easter, Halloween, you name it. So I was really starting from a place of neutrality. When I became really interested in witchcraft and wanted to explore it more openly than my sister was, my parents were willing to have a conversation about it. I think I was 12 or so, and my dad said, "Hey, if you're willing to explore other traditions first before you settle with this one, then I will accept that." So this sent me off on my first excursions of going to church at the age of 12. It was a Presbyterian congregation that my best friend went to at the time, so I went with her family, including Sunday school service. I did that for like a year or so, and in that time, during those Sunday school sessions, we also visited synagogues and a mosque and a Catholic church, and as part of their exploration of other faiths. So it gave me a bit of a light touch on some variety. I did end up choosing witchcraft. And my practice at that point was that of a very young witchling as my friends and I tried to figure things out. And just, you know, fun side note, my dad to this day still accepts my choice. This DIY path also meant there was a lot of time away from the craft as I figured things out. But deep down, I was always committed. My practice was just scattered and sporadic, but I never did it feel like it made me less of a witch. And my practice stayed pretty low key, always having an altar, but my levels of commitment to ritual, spell work, really waxed and waned as the years went, kind of depending on how much the mundane took over, but also because I had really hard time finding a non-deity, more science-based approach. I wanted something that matched my values. I felt like I was constantly working really hard to adapt what I wanted out of my personal practice. In my mid-20s, I started to recommit and had, at that point, become pretty fluent at decoding deity-based texts in a way that worked for me. Still, those that knew about my practice were close friends or acquaintances, especially if they were hanging out in my room where my altar lives. Kind of hard to hide that. It is pretty obvious. My family knew, but it wasn't something that came up often, except maybe holiday time as I tried to encourage a less capitalist Christmas. Less doing, more being. Some years, they kind of played along. Other times, I just enjoyed things solo. Over time, though, my practice became a bit more routine. I tried more things and started to meet other witchy folks, like Alyssa. Then in my early 30s, I moved up to the Pacific Northwest. I found myself in touch with my witchy side. So easy. It was like, as soon as I got here, I was like, oh, hello, witch within. And so I really leaned in, and all the pieces I had gathered over the years started to really fall into a more comfortable place. I will also say that some of this may also just be part of being in your 30s when things do start to click a little bit. In those early 30s years, the pragmatic pagan was born. At this point, I was not really fully out of the broom closet. I tended to keep it pretty secretive unless it came up. And yes, that meant I was hosting a podcast in secrecy. And I wasn't going to lie about it, but I wasn't advertising it either. Then a bit after the podcast came out, a coworker and I connected over some witchy shit, and I shared the podcast. It was at that same time that we were working on a theatrical production of a play called Witch. And there was a discussion around being sure not to offend those that actually follow this as a religious path, since the play is actually a Faustian story that has some very stereotypical references to witchcraft. My name came up as somebody who could maybe be a consultant, and I was kind of outed at work. And I was very lucky. The environment was more curious than anything. I mean, I was at a theater. But there were a lot of assumptions that I had to sort of address. For instance, my boss at the time, bless her heart, asked if her witch Halloween costume was culturally offensive to me, because she wanted to avoid that. Like I said, bless her heart. Which at that point, I started to realize that being out of the broom closet comes with a bit of responsibility to represent our community in the way that I would hope we are seen. And I stepped further and further out until I pretty much advertise it at this point. My friends all know, my colleagues all know. And if I were to, you know, get back into the dating field, it is definitely something I would lead with. I'm mindful that I'm not pushing it in anyone's face, but I have a small work altar at my desk and I don't shy away from my witchy fits or vibes, right? My journey happened in phases and it took time, a lot of time. And honestly, comfort with building up my confidence in my craft, my journey, my values, my beliefs. I wanted to be able to talk about these things if people asked. Once I understood those really well, it became easier to share because my values spoke for the type of human I am. Which for something so analytical and logic-brained in mundane things, I got a lot of questions about how I could believe in something so woo-woo. And that too led to a lot of great discussions about how my beliefs differ not only from Wicca, but paganism and some other systems as well. So, while Alyssa's journey is one that has always been open, mine has been one of opening. And well, Jay, you are still in the bit of the broom closet, yeah?
Yes. My circle of trust is definitely a small one still. Beyond you two and our fine witchy listeners, there's just a few over a handful who know I'm a practicing witch of some kind, and I've only opened up to those people in really the last, like, year or so. Growing up, my family and I were run-of-the-mill Sunday Catholics. For those who are not familiar, that is slang for those who go to church most Sundays, or, you know, another weekend service, shifting around NFL football schedules, usually. Sending kids to Sunday school for the required years, which is typically from First Communion until receiving confirmation, which is usually around age 14 or so, depends on the church. And saying grace at special dinners like Christmas and Easter. And that's about it. Church has never meant a ton to my family growing up, but like it gave us something to do as a family, and the good sermons helped appeal to our better instincts. But then for two summers in high school, I joined a friend of mine at the Christian service camp he grew up going to, and the experience overhauled my whole concept of faith. I was introduced to prayerful meditation, music around a campfire, and deep soul-searching conversations, and they were all pretty progressively minded. We had deep discussions about how the church needed to evolve. We talked about focusing on love and service over dogma and colonial attitudes. It was pretty great. Honestly, I look back on that camp very, very fondly. In college, I dug deep into the worlds of church music and service work, kind of building on that momentum very much. And I say service work, not missionary work, mind you, very different. But once I got out, you know, it all kind of changed a lot. Outside the bubble of my school's faith groups and rhythms, I had to do the real world thing and join a church. And it's really hard to recreate, like, the sincerity I kind of had in that bubble for years. So through my 20s and through 30, I just faded away from church, and I hated it. I really did. I think I don't really know how much I hated it until looking back on it. My Christian years had challenged me to be more humble, fight inequity in the world, and dive deep into my soul regularly to understand myself, bolster myself in hard times, and do the work of becoming an unconditionally loving person. It was a huge hole in my heart that I didn't know how to fill with anything else. So honestly, I just kind of ignored it at best. I filled it with work and life, and I just kind of kept moving forward. One thing, though, had always bothered me about church. Rarely did the world ever come up in church. We talked plenty about how to treat humans, but I can't think of one sermon talking about living in balance with nature. 7 years ago, my witchy life began when I started listening to this great witchy podcast that Alyssa told me her friend had been hosting. It was called The Pragmatic Pagan. And I was like, I'll try this out. Those early episodes, at a time I was really wholly detached from my former faith life, just kind of like relit the beacons in my heart to care about something, to believe in something. But it was a flame of a different, more fascinating color. I began to consider the world of magic little by little. And by the time we were living here and I was sitting at that first autumn equinox ritual with you two, I was totally primed to begin my own path in earnest.
You can't see this, but I am smiling from like ear to ear. And just thank you. We love having you.
It is funny, like until this topic came up, I really hadn't thought through this journey like beat by beat. So it's been nice thinking back and going through it. So as for my coming out of the room closet, you know, given I began my journey in my 30s, for the people that do know, in getting this started, I never really had the challenges of, you know, being a witchy teenager. Privacy was pretty much easy to maintain. I wasn't living at home. I was an adult, so I just did my thing. And double fortunate for me, the Seattle area is a rather progressively minded place, so I don't worry about spending time visiting witchy shops, or even when we're holding our seasonal in-person events together. There's a lot of interest and curiosity and enthusiasm. I do think I'll tell my close family and more friends eventually about how my faith life has evolved since those early years, but I'll admit I don't feel any rush about it. What's more interesting to me is expanding my connections within the witchy community that we've got growing here together, and by proxy, learning more about the craft, myself, the ways we're all connected to everything around us, and thus responsible for it. I do have to say, one of my favorite things about this new path of mine is that there are still some meaningful through lines from my Christian days. My practice and spell work every day challenges me to be more humble, fight inequity in the world and dive deep into my soul regularly to understand myself, bolster myself in hard times, and do the work of becoming an unconditionally loving person. The big difference now being I'm unconditionally loving more than just people. And it's a more holistic and universal sense of the world and its energy that we're all a part of.
Aw, thank you both for sharing.
Thanks for asking.
As you can tell, we come from three very different witchcraft roots and paths, some that are more open and visible to others, some that have grown over time, and some that are still in progress. It goes to show that just because you co-host a witchy podcast doesn't mean that you are all the way out of the broom closet. Who and how you share your journey with is personal, and who you choose to invite into that is very much up to you.
In the last episode, I began my exploration into ice magics. I talked about how I've never really explored using ice in my craft before, but I had the knowledge of how it is commonly used, i.e. freezer spells, going into the subject. We also chatted about some different ideas on how to use it in magic, like the potential of using a dish of frozen water as a divination tool, studying snowflakes, and tuning into the transition points of the states of water rather than just one state. I also expressed how this subject has been actually really difficult for me to get into, because I keep associating ice, the state of water, with ICE, the violent Gestapo that has been set loose in our streets to attack our immigrant neighbors. A lot of my resistance work has been ICE response centered, so thinking about and saying the word ICE a lot has created some mental blocks that I've had to work through. I ended my new moon brew with a rough plan for a freezer-based spell. My intention was to freeze fears I have around a life change Jay and I are looking to make this year, and to melt the ice, allowing those worries to melt away with it. Of course, nature abhors a vacuum, so I also wanted to do something to bookend the spell and replace the fears with courage or bravery. I only had a vague idea of what all this might entail when we last left off, so I spent the remainder of my lunar cycles refining my plan and executing it. As much as I just love kind of winging spells in the moment, I did sit down and write out potential ideas, ingredients, methods, well in advance of actually doing my spell. Some key ideas I had were writing down a short version of my fears and freezing them, along with ingredients that represented them, maybe using water from the melted ice or one of those ingredients to make a drink like Ash had suggested, making like a liquid courage type elixir, and some ideas around timing, mostly that I would do the freezing on a waxing moon and then the releasing on a waning moon. At first, the spell was more complex ingredient-wise. I thought about all kinds of things I could add, both edible and non-edible, like thorns and lemon that I could mix in to the ice. Then after the melting, maybe using that water to make new ice, but with new ingredients, like herbs mixed in and making a multi-layered cocktail with said ice. But in general, as a witch, I don't go heavy on ingredient use in my spells, so I wanted to narrow this down to just a few key components. In the end, the freezing portion of my spell included water, half a lemon, a strip of paper, and some cloves, purely for structural purposes. And my liquid courage would be a simple cocktail that I already really like. I chose the night right before the full moon peak to begin the freezing portion of my spell. I cast my circle and spent the first several moments journaling out my fears, really digging deep into the core of them. While I did this, I allowed myself to feel them, to even get emotional about them. I really wanted to just lay it all out on the table. Once I felt I could move on from that, I wrote a very distilled version of what I had just journaled onto a strip of paper, and I wrapped that around my half lemon and tacked it into place with the clove so that it wouldn't just kind of float away into the water. I placed this in my container that I was going to freeze, and I poured water in slowly while saying, "Into this water I pour my fears, so they may melt away and leave only courage here." I said that three times as I poured enough water in to cover most of the lemon, after all, lemons do kind of float a little bit, and all of the paper. I placed this in my freezer, closed my circle, and left my journal with the fears on my altar to just continue to resonate out. I waited for a good night on a waning moon to do the next part of the spell, which ended up being pretty much exactly a week later, so good timing. Unless it's a longer term spell, i.e. a manifestation spell over the course of like an entire waxing moon, I don't usually let my work hang around for so long. I'm usually a one evening's worth of work kind of person, besides the mundane aspects of any given spell. But it was nice to let this one marinate a little bit and really give me a chance to sit with the work. The morning of the day I wanted to complete my spell, I took the container out of the freezer and set it on my altar with a cloth napkin underneath to absorb condensation, just pro tip right there. I prefer to do my craft after it gets dark out, but I wanted to start the melting earlier since it was a nice-sized chunk of ice and I knew it would take most of the day to finish. I would check in with it periodically and each time say, "As this ice melts today, so do my fears fade away." I'm not quite the bard witch Jay is, so my little incantations are just very basic rhymes. But hey, it doesn't need to be fancy to work. Once it was dark and the ice was fully melted, it was time for the final phase. I gathered the rest of my components, cast a circle, and got down to work. I started by pouring out the water from my melted ice down the drain while saying three times, "I pour my fears down the drain so they may wash and flow away." I took the lemon that was frozen, with a now very soggy strip of paper wrapped around it, back to my altar to concoct my liquid courage. I made myself a French 95, which is a cocktail with bourbon, simple syrup, lemon juice from that particular lemon, shaken with ice and topped with some bubbly. As I made this elixir, I said my final incantation, repeating it three times, of course. I mix my liquid courage with a splash of fear to reclaim my power from it and keep the path forward clear. I then proceeded to enjoy this cocktail slash elixir in front of my altar while holding on to the feeling of courage in my body. After I finished, I closed the circle and left my glass on the altar just to kind of let the energy simmer out.
I don't know why your words are really great. I just want to say, like, words don't need to be complicated. They just need to mean what they need to mean to you. That was awesome. Aww. I loved the words you chose for all the various stages of that. They're super cool.
I appreciate that. It felt a little silly, but I like me a good little rhyming couplet. Oh. Now, of course, with this spell work has come the mundane aspect as well, which included talking to my therapist about these fears and gaining tools from her to help process them and the anxiety that comes up around them. It also involved talking to friends and family and just kind of getting these fears out of my head so I don't cling on to them and stew about it. I also find that it's helpful to me to move my body in some way to process out feelings. I like a nice walk in the woods. All of these are just as important as the spell itself, which is why the mundane work is something we talk about so much. And honestly, the combination of everything has ultimately helped me along a lot with moving through my fears. I don't feel that weight quite so much anymore.
Yeah, I love the layers to this spell. Did you find one aspect more challenging than the other, or any other particular challenges come up? Mundane, emotional, spiritual?
I think for me, the most challenging aspect of this was the like mundane slash emotional kind of tie. I'm not going to get too into it because it's quite personal, but these fears I was wrangling with are rooted in some deeper trauma for me. And something I re-experienced trauma around just a few years ago. It's been hard to do that shadow work around it, and it's still something I'm very much working on. It ended up being a pretty emotional process for me, especially that first part of the spell, working up to the freezing, that writing out my fears. It felt both really scary and also kind of relieving to write everything out that I was feeling and thinking. Luckily, I have a lot of good support systems around me to help process these thoughts and feelings.
Yeah, I do find the journaling often is what can lead into the clearest words when it comes to the spell work. So I wanted to ask about the words.
Yeah.
Because you kind of mentioned they were sort of a distilled version of your journaling. How did it feel playing around with your word-powered incantations, since that is something you don't spend as much time on typically? Do you think you'll keep doing it for future spells?
I mean, doing the little incantation couplets was very fun. I liked planning out the little rhyming lines. So often, because my spell work /method is born of the moment, I just sort of state my intentions out loud without any real structure to them. Since I was doing a little more planning out, I could write these more put-together incantations, like, ahead of time. Well, for me personally, it doesn't necessarily feel more, like, I don't know, powerful than just my usual speaking out loud, it does feel a good bit witchier. A little bit more double-double toil and trouble, if you will.
Totally.
I think there is definitely a good chance I'll keep playing around with, like, pre-reading out my incantations when I have, you know, the foresight to do so, though I will inevitably fall into the spur-of-the-moment approach as well.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned that, you know, you were able to get some good emotions and feels out of this process, mm-hmm. but how did it feel afterwards? Do you consider the spell effective? Would you revisit it again? Anything you would change if you did?
Yeah, you know what? I felt good. I felt really good. And it wasn't just the alcohol. I think that the spell was just really effective for the goal I set out to achieve. Now, we'll see how I still feel once we start implementing our plans this year. I may revisit it again when those fears rear their head, and I would probably do so pretty close to how I did it this time around. I really liked that. I think I would put a little more forethought into better preparing some of my ingredients. I was figuring out a couple of those on the fly, so it would just sort of set myself up better for success. I might also shift the timing slightly and have it be a bit more of a bigger timeline, like for big future looking ahead, more like a full moon to new moon with daily or weekly check-ins rather than a sort of a weekly turnaround.
Yeah, I love a good daily or weekly check-in. I find that, you know, while one and done can be really great for big ritual work, for like spell work, I really like mm-hmm. to continuously revisit. So curious how that works, and I hope it kind of helps as you continue your journey.
Yeah, I'll plus one to that too, especially when like the mundane work related to the spell work is something that will come up for a while. Like it's part of something that's going to last some experience, something you're working on that will take weeks or months. It's like you kind of need that rhythm along the way to just like, it's a marathon, not a sprint. I was curious, because it came up in your general ice explorations, did you consider using any divination work? As like at this point, you know, I tend to pull cards for spell work. That's just my style. But just curious if you thought about that, since that's one thing you could do with ice work.
Yeah, I didn't use any divination with this particular spell. In fact, I don't usually around spell work unless I'm having a really hard time sort of clarifying my intention. Then I will draw tarot cards to just kind of help hone in things or force like an aha moment. For the most part, my divination work happens completely removed from spell work. I usually turn to the cards when I'm feeling unclear about something and need a nudge, or when I want additional insight into a situation, or when I'm kind of like seeking a confirmation of what I'm already feeling. But since I felt sort of really clear about this spell and my intentions, I didn't need that. Like, for me, that's a very much an extra layer rather than a critical part of the process. And I think the ice divination is going to be a cool thing to explore in the future for sure.
Okay, so as a person who is a non-alcoholic person, any ideas for a non-alcoholic liquid courage version?
Yeah, I mean, like, the first thing that comes to mind is just some good old lemonade, maybe with some bubbly water instead of, like, still water to get that fun aspect that I had with the sparkling wine. You can shake the lemon and the simple syrup in the shaker like you would a cocktail and top it off with some bubble water. You could even add maybe some additional things like cherry juice to make a flavored lemonade. Just some ideas. There are also a lot of tasty non-alcoholic spirits out there, like Seedlip, hashtag not sponsored, that provide that sort of like deep flavor that you get from the alcohol without the alcohol, or like an herbal quality that you would get from maybe a gin or something. You could also make an herbal tea blend and brew it and then add the lemon as like maybe another potential non-alcoholic option.
I really like that tea idea.
Mm-hmm. Those are all good options. And a reminder, even in generally, like elixir work too. These do not have to be alcoholic drinks, people. They can, it's whatever you want them to be. Now this topic closes out the year for you. From flowers to smoke to moss and mushrooms, finally ice. How are you feeling about the yearly cycle? Any thoughts or for your topics or adjustments to the Witch's Web process as we're looking into next year?
Oh man, it was a heck of a year, but in a good way. It was cool to have a mix of subjects from ones I knew were used in the craft but hadn't touched myself, to a craft that I was very familiar with but looking to take it to another level, and even something completely new that I had no idea about how to integrate into witchcraft. And yes, that was moss and mushrooms. It felt really well-rounded and well-balanced, but had a couple of challenges here and there that kept things interesting. I think overall, like Jay had mentioned in his previous, or I guess his final full moon focus, these four subjects plus the fifth of astronomy for me would have been too much if I really wanted to dig into something like moss and mushrooms. I honestly could have spent the entire year on that one subject. Whereas with ice, the three lunar cycles were perfect. Looking ahead, I have no idea what I'm going to be getting into. I do feel like the winds are bringing a bit of a busy year my way, so I may do myself a favor and keep things a little bit on the lighter side as far as how many subjects I take on. I'm also interested in doing some more practical things around my and our practice. Things about, like, maybe looking into becoming a nonprofit or LLC for Atomic Witchcraft. Exciting things. Finding ways to host more in-person meetups. We've also chatted a few times about doing worksheets. Or maybe the dream, one day a book.
A book!
I will have some magical subjects I focus on, but the mundane is also really interesting to me as well. A spell to release fears and replace them with courage. You will need a journal or a piece of paper and some pen, a freezer-safe container, half a lemon, cloves, water, and ingredients and tools for your liquid courage. This can be alcoholic or non-alcoholic. On a night of a waxing moon, gather your journal and pen, container, lemon, cloves, and water in a pitcher. Take them to your altar or space you do spellwork and cast a circle however you do. Take some time and write out a long version of the fears you want to release. Get really specific here. Feel these fears and any emotions that may come up around them, and really don't hesitate to spend time here. Once that feels finished to you, take a strip of paper and write down a short version of your fears on it, something that encapsulates all that you just felt. Wrap this around your half a lemon and tack it in place with a few cloves. You may first need to carefully use a knife point to pierce the lemon skin so you can push the clove in without it breaking. Place this in your container and pour the water in while saying, "Into this water I pour my fears, so they melt away and leave only courage here." State this three times as you pour, and while doing so, imagine your fears pouring out of you via the water. Set this container in the freezer and close your circle. Allow a minimum of 24 hours to freeze, though you'll ideally want to wait until the waning moon phase to do the next steps of the spell. During that waning moon phase, on the morning of the night you want to complete your spell, take your container out of the freezer and place it on your altar or space where you do your spell work. This will melt throughout the day, and as it does, check in once in a while, each time saying, "As this ice melts today, so do my fears fade away." If you have to be away from this melting, say at work or other obligations, just say that incantation when you take it out of the freezer and hold it as a thought with you as you move throughout the day. Once the ice has completely melted, it's time for the final phase of active spell work. Gather the recipe, ingredients, and tools for your liquid courage. This drink will feature the juice from the half lemon, so a cocktail that contains this ingredient or a non-alcoholic drink like lemonade will be best. Cast your circle. Take your container with the now water and lemon half to a sink. Pour out the water while saying, "I pour my fears down the drain so they may wash and flow away." State this three times as you pour, and while doing so, imagine your fears rushing away with the water. Bring the lemon half with the paper still wrapped around it back to your spell space. Craft your liquid courage using the juice from this lemon while saying, "I mix my liquid courage with a splash of fear to reclaim my power from it and keep the path forward clear." As usual, state this three times. Enjoy your liquid courage in your spell space, holding in your body the feelings of courage and empowerment. Once your drink is finished, close the spell how you prefer, by ringing a bell, clapping, saying so mot it be, and close your circle. Dispose of the spent lemon half and tear up and toss your now soggy fear paper along with it. Do the mundane work that feels best to you to accompany the spell. That wraps up our full moon focus episode on ice magic. We hope you'll join us again just around the new moon for our next New Moon Brew, featuring Ash's fourth and final subject, Fossil and Bone. We'll also be wrapping up our featured segments, Charting the Celestial and Resistance Radio, and give our thoughts on Queering Your Craft in our final book club of the season.
In the meantime, join us on Patreon for podcast updates and team news. It's free to join, and there are lots of resources to explore.
And if you are interested in community, you can always find us in our Discord server. Links to join are in the episode info.
And until next time, keep your world witchy!